Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Hello and welcome, Ducks fans, where and whenever you are watching or listening. This is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never-before-heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. And you know, Sam, it's a very important week this week. You know, everyone's kind of been talking about it. That energy's there. There's that excitement around not just the program, but the entire nation. It's Veterans Day. And I just want to say happy Veterans Day to you, my co-host, Samuel Tidrick-Smith. How you doing after that nice little beatdown at Colorado?
Well, Nick, I am doing just fine. I'm not necessarily sure I'm the one that should be getting a happy Veterans Day, but you know what? For the people I know who are, I'll take it for them. Nick, I am so excited for this week. I'm so excited for the next few weeks. I'm back up in the beautiful state of Oregon, hunkering down here for the end of the college football season. Three games in state to end the year. I'm going to do my best to be at every single one of them. We'll see what happens, especially with that last one. But it is just such a great week to be a Duck fan. We saw such a fantastically fun game up at Boulder this past weekend. I can't wait to get into that. But first, as always, there's a lightning yellow round.
Yeah, and I guess if we have to do it about something this week, we have an opponent other than, you know, just Oregon, like every week. But we are facing the University of Washington Huskies, I believe, this week. Some like Husky Hate Week, like this podcast started on. But you know what? Let's just go up and take 2 minutes to talk about things we hate about the Huskies. Go ahead. I'll start the clock.
Well, you know what? This is going to be a real simple one, but I hate this whole greatest building, greatest setting in college football BS. Look at location, location, location. I get it. It's pretty prime, but beyond the land, it's bleachers. It's a lot of bleachers. It's a lot of stacked bleachers. That's not impressive. You have a canopy, kind of. That's not that impressive. We need to dial back the whole greatest thing. I'm a big believer that if you go top five, a lot less people argue with you. I'm on that boat. It's not the greatest.
Well, speaking of boats, I think the only thing that they have going for them is sailgating. And can you really even do it this time of year? Watching that Oregon State game last week, it looked miserable to even be in the stands, let alone out on your boat. Come on.
I mean, look at Baylor does it better. Baylor does sailgating a whole lot better, and it's always warm down there. But another Husky thing that I hate, and this started in Seattle with the Huskies, I hate the wave, Nick. I hate the wave. Whatever the sporting event it is, wherever you're at, it's the dumbest excuse to get the kind of people who can't pay attention throughout an entire ball game to be able to do something. Woo, I'm standing up now. Now I'm sitting. Now I'm standing. Now I'm sitting. Who cares? It's boring. It's lame. Move on.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do just a quick one. The damn helmet cart. Need I say more?
You don't need to say more. No, it's one of the silliest, dumbest things there is in college football, 100%. Here's another one I'm going to give you. The fact that they genuinely, wholeheartedly will put up that W symbol with their hands like it isn't silly and cringe. I get it. Oregon has their O, and that at least has a legitimate backstory behind it, and it's fun to throw a dubs down. But when just crossing a pair of your fingers and holding your hands up counts as your logo, yuck.
I'll end it on two truths that they don't want to accept. The 1991 National Championship would have legitimately been won by Miami on the field, would have whooped your asses, and it's not even a Husky mascot, it's a Malamute. Accept it. Mutts. And that's all we're going to do because, you know, we've got a lot of Colorado to talk. And
wait, did we not even have enough time to get to the Made the Playoffs banner? Really? We didn't even have enough time to get there.
I've tried to forget it, except for when I get to go see it and laugh at Autzen North. And next year we're going to do that. But this week, we'll have plenty of to talk about with the Huskies and with our special Veterans Day guest we have coming up. But let's recap this Colorado game first, because let's not overlook the Ducks came out three straight quarters of 14 points and then, you know, a casual one touchdown fourth quarter. But man, I mean, we were hoping to see a really, really stellar defensive performance and, you know, a couple plays away there from getting the shutout I was hoping for.
Well, Nick, this game was just so fun to watch. This was the most creative, the most interesting, one of the most fun games we've seen. I honestly think my three favorite touchdowns in recent Oregon history happened back to back to back. I'm going to let you get into the first one because I know you've been wanting to talk about that one on here for since the moment it happened. I called you on the phone moments after the opening touchdown. And within a second, I was like, he's going to take care of that one. But to see Nix catch the second touchdown, Sewell run in the third, such a creative and fun ball game. It was a pleasure to watch.
Well, I remember telling you and a lot of other people from when I got to go see the scrimmage in fall camp that this Josh Connerly kid was going to be special. Well, I didn't think he was going to be Randy Moss in the end zone special, okay? And no one on him to even have to Moss, but still go up there, high point the ball, bring it down, and the offensive line move right there. You could tell he was thinking about whipping out a dance and then realized, I'm an offensive lineman. This could go extremely poorly. Go celebrate with your teammates. And man, I mean, all offensive linemen out there, especially the ones on the field, were celebrating. I know out there, Jeff Schwartz was going, hey, thick six, baby, thick six. Love to see it. Love the way they set it up and love that the only guy on the Colorado defense that could have even possibly have done anything was way too late to get there. I mean, it was just a thing of beauty seeing them change jerseys out there. I kind of thought, some could be up here. We're in a 90s number. That's looking fancy. But man, it was just so well played, perfectly played by our coaching staff and executed by the team real well. And man, you know that they've been giving those looks with, you know, some of those interesting formations and sets out there, but just everything that we've been seeing out of that was just burying the football into people. And then to just, go tackle eligible and pull that out. It's definitely given all our opponents the rest of this November that one little extra wrinkle to think about and have to study and when the game plan for us.
Well, and I love that you mentioned it was tackle eligible. It wasn't as if they had an extra offensive lineman out there lined up as a tight end or anything like that. He did directly go from that left tackle position, slip past the two defenders, and immediately nobody even close to him in the end zone. God, that was one of my favorite play designs I've seen in quite some time. And goodness gracious, they had to follow it up then immediately with a Bo Nix touchdown reception. How fun was that? It's just, we've seen the play before this season too. That's the thing. That wasn't the first time we've seen Nix receive a ball. He actually did it against Washington State. I believe it was for like a 16 or an 18 yard pickup. But to be able to see that little move, the quick pitch to Bucky Irving. Irving does just enough with the pass. Actually, credit to him. He led Nix with that pass. Bo went up and got it, trotted into the end zone. I believe it was either Bass or Walk who got out to the edge and was able to really clean it up, make sure nobody was there. But both opening touchdowns were so much fun to see. That first quarter was a lot of excitement, a lot of energy. Really, really fun. And then to start the second quarter, you hand it off to Noah Sewell, a guy who's, since he was a junior in high school wanting to go to Oregon, we've all said, hey, you could play both sides. You could play both ways. He finally was able to play some offense, ran in that touchdown. I think my favorite aspect of it, though, was seeing him with Coach Lanning on the sideline afterwards. Yeah. The level of excitement, the level of togetherness, if you will. I was really, really impressed by just how much fun that whole team had in Boulder on Saturday.
Exactly. They're playing for each other right now, and that is so huge. And they've just been absolutely going out there and finding different ways, different attributes everybody can bring to this team, especially on the offensive side of the football, and making it work. And, you know, I can't think of what seems like a quieter 120-yard day than Bucky Irving on 11 carries and a touchdown pass. I mean, it's almost like he is such a stud. We're used to these amazing plays. We can still remember it. And it's just like, no, he's just kind of cutting through them. I mean, other than the touchdown pass itself, it's just like, man, it's kind of a quiet. And Noah Whittington came out there, would average 4.5 yards a carry, got one touchdown himself. Bo Nix with another 5 touchdown day. It's just, you know, especially considering, you know, it snowed the day before in Colorado. And while the weather wasn't too bad, the wind was absolutely crazy. You were seeing the trash all over the field and stuff, and having to deal with, you know, that in the passing game in itself is something that's was really, really managed well by our team.
I was impressed with it. I was impressed with how they managed the atmosphere, managed the excitement. I mean, look, that is one of the premier places to see a college football game, to experience college football. Ralphie running out to start the game. It's an exciting atmosphere, and it's probably one that can sneak up on you if you're not ready. Oregon was absolutely ready. You mentioned Bucky Irving, 11 carries, 120 yards. Very glad that my thought and assumption that he would snap back after that Cal performance came to fruition. He looked fantastic. And Noah Whittington, he might have been a part of two or three of the loudest plays that have happened this season. He was in there thumping people. He got hit very hard early in the game, but then continued to chug throughout. And on his touchdown run, he just lowered the shoulder pads, moved through a couple of guys, some real loud cracks that made their way onto the audio for the ESPN coverage of that ball game.
Yeah.
So much fun to see that out of him. So excited with how he's begun to turn it on the second
five
half
catches too. Five catches.
He really has become the primary out of the backfield receiver for Oregon. And I kind of love it. I love that somebody like him, his shiftiness, his speed, you'd be able to get him the ball out of the backfield like that, put his shoulders down, get some work done. Good work overall by the entire running back team, though. Dollars, 6 carries, 15 yards. Keelahana Hassenritter, a guy who we've talked about on this podcast before, got in there, 2 carries for 9 yards late there down the stretch. And then, as we know, Bo Nix, 9 carries, only 16 yards, but 2 touchdowns, 1 on a QB sneak, 1 on a beautiful little zone read. Awesome, awesome work on the ground from this Oregon team. And through the air, they were effective too. The yards after catch guys, they were doing their jobs.
Yeah, we had an effective day in the passing game, and especially with just Troy Franklin getting just one catch, albeit a big 41-yarder. Yeah, we were able to make it work, and you could tell a lot of being able to open up that passing game with passing to your running backs helps you fight some of those conditions, especially when it got a lot windier into that game. And, you know, it was great that we got to see, you know, a ton of different guys getting reps, but the guy we wanted to see have a great day, going back to where he came from, Gonzo, man. And the refs robbed him. The refs absolutely robbed him of a touchdown there. But hey, once a Duck, we'll give it to him. I think any Ducks fan out there that was watching that both times, live and the replay, I can't believe they didn't get that call right.
I mean, there was a strip of green between the cleat and the sideline. We all saw it. White cleat, white sideline, strip of green right there. I think it was pretty visible, but Pac-12 refs are going to Pac-12 ref. We get that. It happens. Bo Nix was able to punch it in. Hey, if Bo Nix ends up with a trip to New York at the end of this season, he might be able to look at Gonzo and say, sorry, I had to take that one. That one needed to be me. I needed to pad the stats there a little bit. But Christian Gonzalez was fantastic in this game. I heard them on the broadcast several times just say, hey, locate zero, don't throw it that way at all. Twice Colorado made that mistake, and he made them pay each time. First, just a perfect coverage interception. I can't express enough how much that looked like it was just training tape that's going to be shown to young cornerbacks all over the country. Perfectly in stride with the receiver, step for step, kept his eyes both on the receiver as well as on the quarterback, was able to turn, get to that football, take it back to the house, called out at the 2. He wasn't out at the 2. Then on the next play, just moving back into coverage, the way he was able to cover ground, really, at least from the TV angle, came out of absolutely nowhere. Picked that ball off, ran it back, another good return there. He had such a fantastic ball game. Love seeing that from him. Love seeing the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Week wearing an Oregon uniform. He looked great doing it.
Yeah. Well, and another guy who's quietly kind of looked pretty great this season in moments, but really came out this game, the defensive side of the ball, was Keon Ware-Hudson. And four tackles out there, and it's like, hey, you know, I think that's a guy who, I when you go back and check the tape this season, he's really developed and hasn't gotten enough credit for that, because, you know, it's kind of usually a pretty selfless position there. You're not always making plays, but in this game, he definitely did.
Well, and Ware-Hudson's been in the right place at the right time, it seems, throughout most of this season. Remember, he had that huge pass back bat down. It went back to Cameron Ward, but in that Washington State game, if he wasn't able to get out there, get a hand up, that's probably a completion in the end zone for a touchdown late in that ball game against Wazoo. Then in the Arizona game, I believe he had the fumble recovery, and he had a fumble recovery in that ball game. He's really has done a good job of putting himself in the right position. Obviously, when you have guys like DJ Johnson and Brandon Dorlus coming around the edges, the guy in the middle there, he really is supposed to be a little bit more of a plug. But when that plug is able to get active the way Ware-Hudson has, there really is no stopping what that defensive front will be able to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and just overall, outside of Noah getting the touchdown, the linebacking core, you know, it wasn't a day you had to rely on them so much because we were getting it done up front. But a guy who did stand out from that linebacking core was Keith Brown, for sure. He's turning into quite the player as well. And it's just exciting to see so many players that are getting developed and getting better. You know, sometimes in teams, just the starters, or, you know, maybe a couple key backups, but it's really, a testament to how everybody on this team's bought into the improving every single week formula. And, you know, it's something Lanning preaches, but you hear it echoed in every single interview that these kids are doing. And it's incredible to see that it's played out on the field ever since the Georgia game. They've gotten incrementally better at certain things every single week and found margins of improvement to become an even scarier team than when they lined up against Eastern Washington.
Well, and I think what I loved about, especially seeing Keith Brown succeed this weekend, he had that big play on fourth down when Colorado was trying to run, be able to pick it up. He made the stop there. Love seeing the Oregon kids succeed. Love seeing the local kids succeed. Almost more importantly, though, love seeing a guy who was forced to step up succeed. In that Cal game, Jeffrey Bassett gets called for that targeting penalty. He is pulled out of that game, and standing in the stands in that moment, I went, well, going to get some Keith Brown run next week. Excited to see how that goes. And it paid off very well. This Oregon linebacking group is a really, really deep one. And I think because they are so often playing with basically two linebackers, three technically, because you do have the edge rusher, but when they're almost always attacking the quarterback, you've got those two guys there. And most of the season, it's been Bassa, it's been Sewell. But you also have a bunch of other very talented guys in that group, such as Keith Brown, such as Justin Flo, even guys like LeDuc are back there as well. It's a really, really talented group. And so being able to see that second unit step up the way they did, whether it was Flo who made some big plays up in Boulder, whether it was Keith Brown who we're talking about right now, I really, really appreciated seeing this Oregon depth step up in a big way.
Yeah, and it's going to be really, really key as you get into November. You're always, you know, the chances of injury go up. You know, you're still dealing with not just the stress of, you know, the toughest time of year football, but, you know, the seasonal changes, gets colder, got to take care of your body, and you're adding on top of the stress of what school gets to about this time of year. So, you know, a lot of people don't take that into consideration in the college workload. Now, a lot of guys manage their schedule, or, you know, if you're like some of these transfer guys that have already graduated and stuff, it's a very light workload. But, man, you've got to take care of your body a lot this year, because in those cold games, man, those hits, they hurt a lot longer. And getting yourself back up in shape is really important. And if you can't, next man up has to be ready. And this team has definitely been giving those guys the reps they need to get ready. And I'm excited, man. I'm excited for these next three games, because it's going to tell us so much about this team and their ability to come together through adversity. Because, man, the first couple months before the season, losing Spencer Webb, the Georgia game, to where they are now and the possibilities that they have in front of them. I mean, I don't think if you would have gone back and told me, you know, week two that this would all happen, that we'd get wins, I wouldn't be that surprised. But if you had told me that Bo Nix is starting to be in the talks for Heisman, if you told me that we were having one of the top, not just scoring offenses, but most efficient offenses in the country, I don't know if I would have believed you. But man, I am sure glad that we've been on this ride together. And I'm damn excited to go into this next week because it is Husky Hate Week. We do have to address it eventually, but it's really been Oregon has been our opponent every single week.
And I think Oregon is going to continue to be the opponent every single week. This has become what I think a lot of people, myself included, are comfortable saying, if nothing else, the sixth best team in the country. This is a team that is very, very, very good. I remember after that Georgia game, we were both sitting here saying, hey, we don't know anything. All we know is that Oregon is at this moment 46 points worse than Georgia. I don't think they're 46 points worse than Georgia anymore. I don't know. I wouldn't say that they're better, but I don't know if they're 40. I don't think they're 46 points worse anymore. I think this is a team that has improved throughout this season. This is a team that's proven themselves with big wins on the road in tough environments, like the win at Washington State, like the win that they had to play at Arizona on a rowdy night in a place where they don't have a lot of success. Being able to take down a top 10 team in UCLA, being able to take down a top 25 team in BYU, and even what they were able to do on this last road trip. Yes, you're playing a couple of teams with losing records. You do what you're supposed to do against those teams. Don't let it be closer than it needs to be. They really didn't at all. This Oregon team has shown up. They've done their work. They've done their job. I'm very, very excited to see how that plays out with these last three games of the season. A gauntlet that I think we all saw coming when the schedule came out. Now it's time to see if Oregon can execute.
Well, and I think a lot of people, regardless of if that margin of victory would change if we played Georgia now or not, I think a lot of people underestimated how damn good Georgia is. And with a month of preparation to just focus one game plan, one team, come out with a completely different game plan, man, not gonna have quite as much time in the playoffs for that. It's gonna be a similar amount of preparation, but we do have a team that's more prepared. But seeing them go and just lock down Tennessee, I think it told a lot of people, just especially those that really thought Tennessee was going to go in there and kick their ass. I mean, it was honestly a bigger beatdown than the score ever indicated, because Georgia had them on lock, man, and they underestimated how tough it was to go into their place and get a win. And while we played a neutral site game, I would argue that it was a lot more, an even bigger spectacle to be in their, you know, NFL size arena celebrating coming off a national championship. I just think a lot of people are still so stuck on that number without looking at the logistics of everything. And we'll continue to hear that, but all Oregon has to do is take care of its business, take care of the opponent in front of them. And I feel really confident about their ability to do that. It's been interesting to see this team galvanize and come together under so many new faces, because we often talk about, and a lot of people talked about with USC, like, how would it work with all these transfers come in? How do you get them to gel as a team? And I think a lot of people completely overrated how you can be able to generate chemistry if everybody you're bringing in is somebody you believe is a great guy, a great fit for your team, and you're a great evaluator of that. I mean, Lanning's showing us it's possible.
Nick, it's certainly possible. It's certainly possible to do quite a lot, and I think that this team is going to be fully capable of it. Now, do they have challenges ahead of them? Absolutely. They still have to take care of business. In control of your own destiny does not mean that your destiny is guaranteed. It just means that you have the power. Oregon has the power. It's time to see what they do with it.
Well, man, on that note, I think we've got enough said. Now, what I want to see what we're going to do with is our next guest for Veterans Day. We've got former Oregon Duck defensive end Nick Reed and fellow Hall of Famer. So with us now, one of my favorite alumni, a guy we've wanted on the show ever since we very first started that first Husky Hate Week in 2018, former Oregon defensive end Nick Reed. Nick, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, man. When I first stepped onto campus, I'm telling you, I felt pretty confident. Josh Schurge had taught me a lot about the college program and the system I was stepping into, but it all fell apart worse than my pass set the first time I had to line up against you in a live 11 on 11. Now, man, what was it about you that gave you that intense focus and that first step to just be locked in so much to the snap of the ball that you made offensive linemen like me just tremble before the ball was even snapped?
I wouldn't lose a lot of sleep over it. You were a freshman when I was a senior, so there's a little bit of an age gap there. But I don't have a great answer for you. I always like to think that in the offseason I outworked the other defensive ends, and when it came to playing tackles, I don't want to insult any offensive linemen. Maybe I do, but I outthought them. You know, it's kind of a chess game, and I took good pride, great pride in how to play that game.
Nick, as a guy from down in California, you decided to come up, spend your college years in Oregon. What was it about Eugene? What was it about the University of Oregon football program that really attracted you, made you want to wear that green and yellow?
Yeah, I'm kind of from all over. My family moved out to California when I was in junior high-ish time frame, and it was a great place to go to high school, and I'm really glad I did, because I don't think I would have got the looks I did. I went to a really good football high school just by dumb luck. My quarterback was Mark Sanchez, so it gave me looks that I probably wouldn't have got if I had gone anywhere else. But that all being said, I was really eager to leave Southern California. I did a couple trips, and I just loved Eugene. I love the Northwest, and I had a pretty good feeling I was going to enjoy my time up there. And it's really hard to choose a program because coaches come and go and teams change. But I knew I was going to like the Northwest, and I knew I was going to like Eugene. And so it was an easy choice, and that became my home, not only just for my football career, but that was my home base when I was playing in the NFL too. So and the only reason I'm not there now is because I don't really have a choice. I live in Missouri now.
Yeah, and when you first came to Eugene and compared to now, man, a lot different. What's it like for you when you go back to the campus, you see the HDC building there and everything that used to be a parking lot?
Yeah, it's crazy. I went to a game maybe 2 months ago against BYU. And, you know, what we used to think of as the Moshofsky Center and the Kaz, and that was all like brand new, top of the line, super cool. That's, you know, it's like getting dusty now. They wouldn't even let me into the new building. So, you know, who knows what it's going to look like in 10 years, but it's, you know, obviously the Nike influence and where it's going and where it's come from is really impressive.
Nick, when you got to Eugene, you were involved pretty early on in your career. You end up having, as everybody knows, a pretty fantastic and well-awarded career. I guess the question I would have is that going into those later years of your career, whether it was as a junior, a senior, an upperclassman in general, what was it like to be a leader of that group? What was it like to really be on the forefront of Oregon football teams that were changing the trajectory of the program?
I think probably Nick Cody could tell you more about how the trajectory changed. I think I was there for the very beginning of it. And you'll hear a lot of players talk about 2006 to 2007. 2006 was one of the worst years we had in, you know, I guess you would say new Oregon history. And then we had a sit down, come to Jesus moment where we talked it out. I can't remember the location of the place. Maybe
Camp Harlow.
Yeah, Camp Harlow. Thank you. And then the next year, it was crazy. We were a totally different team. And, you know, it was kind of a kumbaya deal, but it worked. And that all being said, we had a really good run in 2007. And I think the trajectory of the team changed from there. As far as being a leader, you know, I probably was never the, I think I used to think of myself as a leader by example. And I don't know if it's because I spent more time in the Air Force or what, but, you know, maybe I could have been a better leader. You can't just lead by example, I guess is what I'm saying. And you see guys like Bo Nix and the players on the team now that I think are real, you know, real true leaders. I did my best, but the team has definitely gotten better since then.
Well, you were more like the silent assassin on our team for the most part. But honestly, man, you don't give yourself enough credit. You really did always bring it with your work effort. And a lot of our guys on our defensive side of the football did in that group. One guy I know that in tandem, you guys were probably the most unique Pac-10 defensive ends in the league. But Will Tukuafu, what was it like lining up opposite of him and some of the things you got to see him do in practice compared to what you know your skill set as a pass rusher?
I love Will. I haven't talked to him in a while, but I still love Will. He's an amazing defensive end, and I can tell you a good story. So he's a JUCO transfer, if I'm remembering right. And somebody somewhere told him when he got to Oregon, he'd get the number 49. And I was wearing number 49 at the time, which apparently is a number that only kickers wear for the last 15 years, but that's fine too. Anyways, Coach Bilotti called me in the office and said, "Hey, Will Tukuafu wants 49 and I said, "Sure, I'll give you 49 if I can get us. I want a number 4 and Coach Blair laughed and said basically no. And so I said, "I guess I'll keep 49 and so I never gave it to, I hadn't met Will at this point, but I didn't give up my number for him, and he took 39, I think. He never had any hard feelings about it. The nicest guy on the planet, the hardest worker on the team. And I, you know, that he parlayed all that into a great NFL career. So I couldn't be, you know, there's not a guy in the world who deserves it more than him. He's a great dude. And it was fun to play football with him."
Nick, when you played at the University of Oregon, there was the luxury almost of being able to have such a great group of defensive backs working behind you. How much can you attribute the success of a D lineman, of an edge rusher, to being able to have a group that strong, taking care of receivers downfield and maybe making it a little bit harder for the quarterback to find a read?
Yeah, what makes me think, or what makes people think that maybe I was a good defensive end, was that I had a lot of sacks. And that was, I bought into that. That was my focus, maybe to the running game's detriment at times. But yeah, I wanted to beat the tackle and get after the quarterback. And you can't do that if one, I'll start with this. You can't do that one if your team's not good, because if you're losing, they're just going to run the ball. And then two, you can't do that if you don't have some good coverage downfield. You got to make the quarterback. He can't just take two or three steps and unload the ball. He's got to take 5 steps, which takes time and takes coverage, or he's got to do a 2 or 3 step drop and go to his second, third look before the defensive ends in particular have time to get there. So yeah, I'm super thankful that we had an amazing defense. I think our defensive backfield in 2007, 2008, 2009, I wasn't on the 2019, but there's guys who have, there's probably 50 years of NFL talent in there.
Definitely. And, you know, you had a lot of NFL talent yourself. I still remember going over practice film and thinking, man, two things I'm most scared about going against Nick Reed: I don't get off the ball fast enough, and he gets that single finger into my shoulder pads and slingshots himself past me to the quarterback, or I get back too quickly and then he spin moves inside directly into the quarterback. What was your favorite move? And like, what was your confidence level of having that first go-to and then your setups after?
Yeah, I have to give thanks to the spin move. I think without the spin move, I wouldn't have had any Oregon career to speak of. And I certainly wouldn't have had an NFL career. And I obviously didn't create it or invent it. I was taught it by a high school football coach. And then I came to Oregon and Coach Gray helped refine it. And you can't win the pass rush with just one move. You got to have, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. You got to have counters to the moves that people are going to be looking for. So I spent a lot of time, even after that, my time at Oregon, trying to think of counters to the moves, because the spin move became kind of, I think, what people would expect that I would do. And if they knew it was coming, it was really easy to beat, and it made me look like a moron. So you know, you had to have a counter to the counter to the counter all day long. And it did really feel at times like a chess game to me anytime I was lining up against a tackle on a Saturday or even, you know, even in practice.
Looking ahead to this current Oregon team this coming week, Oregon plays Washington. We already talked about it in the first segment. We're going to talk about it even more in the last segment of the show. But with you right here, Nick, was there a particular Washington game or moment that stuck out to you, whether it was all white up in Husky Stadium for the first time or whether it was opening the season in 2008 against them? Was there something that really sticks out to you?
Yeah, I kind of expected you guys would ask about the Huskies, and it makes sense. It's Husky Hate Week. I have to admit, I have a Husky now, and I just have to say it out loud. I don't kick her, but maybe we should. As a joke for anyone who likes dogs, I like dogs too. I will say I didn't actually go back and confirm this, but I'm pretty sure if you looked at it from 2005 to 2008, when I was at Oregon, we never lost to the Huskies. That's probably the only Pac-10 team back then that I can say that about. And then, yeah, if you made me pick one, I think the one up in Washington was in 2007. It was the only time I ever played at Husky Stadium, but the one in 2008 at home, opening for my senior year, opening game, night game, we beat them pretty good. So I'd have to pick that one.
Yeah, and beat them into an 0-12 season, which they will never forget.
I
love that. Even more, I loved getting to see you at the BYU game, getting inducted to the Hall of Fame. A little late, but as good a time as ever, because you got to talk about your process doing and coordinating the Rose Bowl flyover. That what was that like?
Yeah, it was good seeing you at the Hall of Fame event as well. It felt like what must be like a high school reunion. There was so many faces and dudes and coaches and staff that I didn't have enough time to talk to all of them or any of them. And I don't think I even got a chance to talk to you. So it was a really cool event, and I'm glad we finally made it work after COVID, and I had a baby and I couldn't go to the other two. So really glad to go, but so the Rose Bowl flyover is something that I'm a pilot in the Air Force. I fly the B-2 and the T-38, the two different airplanes we fly here at this base. And the Rose Bowl flyover is something we've done in the B-2 for 10, 15 years. If you ever see Lee Corso on College Game Day, he's got his Rose Bowl pin on his lapel every game, which makes all the B-2 pilots pretty happy. Anyways, the Rose Bowl flyover is a big deal for us. We love doing it. I sold my soul to be a part of the event. As soon as I kind of saw the writing on the wall that the Ducks were going, I emailed my commander and I told him, I'll do any kind of public affairs events you want. I'll do anything you want. I got to be a part of this. And they said, dude, do you want to do the flyover? Do you want to go to the game and be the ground crew? Because we need a guy on the ground to say, hey, the national anthem started late, so you need to be 5 seconds later, because we really pride ourselves on being right on time at the end of the national anthem. I decided, since the Ducks were playing in the Rose Bowl and the guys who do the flyover take 3 hours to get home after the flyover, you just absolutely miss the entire game. I decided to do the ground crew, which was a great decision. It was awesome. They take really good care of you, and you call in the B-2 on top of the Rose Bowl. And then I just got to watch, like, no joke, the most fun Oregon football game I've ever watched. It was just a beautiful setting and close game, and it was a good fight, and it was a blast. So yeah, I didn't fly in the jet. A lot of people think I was in the airplane, but I was actually in the stadium with everyone else.
Well, Nick, you mentioned the Air Force service, and so I'm curious to ask. My dad was in the military for many, many years. My little brother's actually in basic training right now as we speak. The question I have for you was, when the NFL career wound down, when you decided to make that leap and to join the Air Force, what was your thought process and what really drove you toward wanting to make that be the next chapter?
I've answered this question once or twice before. Football, I think, was kind of always a detour for me. Growing up, my dad was a flight surgeon, so he was a doctor for pilots in the Navy. So I was always close to the military and aviation adjacent, I guess you'd say. In 2010, we had the NFL lockout. So normally we report to camp in March or April, but we didn't actually report until July. So I spent that time getting my private pilot's license, just flying GA airplanes in Eugene. And I really enjoyed it. I was coming off an injury that year. And then I went to Chicago and made the team, which I was excited about. And then I got cut 3 or 4 months later and kind of just saw the writing on the wall as far as the end of my career. So I started the application process for the Air Force. I knew I liked moving new places, meeting new people. I knew I liked flying. And I had to, you know, I guess I still don't really think I have a real job, but I had to get a more real job than playing football. So I started the process in 2011 when I was still playing football, and it just timed up perfectly where in 2012, when I got cut by the Vikings, and at the end of August, I got the call a couple of days later that said I had my spot or my pilot spot. And I just had to go to officer training school and then pilot training after that.
So I'm curious whether it was your football career overall or just Oregon specifically, what lessons did you learn that help, you know, apply to your daily life now?
That's a good question. I hate to lead off with, you know, life's not fair, life is hard, but I think some days at practice or playing football or, you know, sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way. Kind of the same thing when you're flying. We do annual check rides, which I guess you would equate to like a game. I don't know. It's hard to equate the football to flying, but sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way and you got to bounce back. You can't really, you can't let losses affect you. You can't let, even if you lose a play, it's kind of like messing something up in the airplane on your check ride. You just got to roll the punches and move on and you'll probably be fine. Nobody's ever flown a perfect sortie. No one's ever played a perfect game. So they do equate that way really well. But, you know, another thing that I really enjoy is being in the Air Force, flying with a bunch of, you know, I've been here for 5 years now, and it's kind of like being on a football team. We get to know each other really well. We deploy together. We do trips together. It's a real similar feeling to being on a football team, which is a lot of fun.
Nick, the last one I got for you before we get you out of here, we don't want to take too much of your time at all. I'm taking my favorite question before Nick can take it from me, because Nick has a habit of always taking my favorite question, or the one that at least started as my favorite here. So I'll ask you, as a guy who has played in some fantastic uniforms, whether it was at Oregon, being a part of that first squad to rock neon green in Seattle, whatever it might be, during your time with the Ducks, what was the favorite combination or the favorite uniform you ever got to wear? Was it the steel plating? Was it a Grello helmet? What really stuck out to you?
Yeah. For me, we just had the different uniform combinations most of my time, or maybe my first year or two at Oregon. We only started like changing helmet colors, maybe my junior year, I think. I don't want to talk about the Las Vegas Bowl in 2006. That might have been the first new helmet we wore, which didn't go well. So favorite, I kind of always like the really obnoxious, like electric lightning yellow that I think they're wearing this weekend. So yep. I'll go with that just for the time. Yeah.
Perfect. Love it. Well, we're going to see a lot of yellow in Autzen Stadium cheering against those Huskies this week. And just want to know what your thoughts are on Coach Lanning and this year's team and how they've bounced back from that Georgia loss from what you've been able to catch up with.
I've been able to watch almost all the games. I'm thankful that they've been doing so well this year, because I live in Missouri, and maybe if they weren't, you know, if they were only putting on West Coast games or something, I wouldn't be able to see it. But the new staff has been amazing. It's been great to watch. It feels like, and no discredit to any previous staffs, but it kind of has that Chip Kelly feel of watching exciting football. And I know that's probably more Kenny Dillingham than Coach Lanning, but it's been really fun to watch the offense. And I can't say enough good things about Bo Nix and all the stuff he's been through getting here. And then coming to his first game at Oregon and getting blown out by Georgia and bouncing back. And he's bounced back. You know, he went to Wazoo and it looked like, man, he just threw a bad pass and the Ducks are down. He bounced back. And ever since then, he's just been a unstoppable. So he's been playing his ass off. It's been a lot of fun to watch. And I, you know, obviously I'm watching defense too. I really like the defense. There's some defensive linemen there that if they were playing for more years, I'd be worried about some of my records. So I've been really impressed. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
Well, thanks for coming on. It's been a lot of fun talking with you, and thank you for your service, Nick.
It's been my pleasure. I've had a good deal so far.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Once a duck, always a duck.
Now go Ducks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Go Ducks. Well, Sam, man, I don't want to jinx the streak, but I don't know who we're going to line up for next week that's going to be able to continue the thing we have going with fantastic guests. But Nick Reed continues it for this season. And, man, just what a great perspective and something a little bit different and really, really good to get in on this Veterans Day.
Well, you know, Nick, we have a lot of our favorites on, and Nick Reed continues to be one of our favorites, but he's also, I think, just an in general Oregon fan favorite, too. I think number 49 meant a whole lot to a whole lot of people, so pretty stoked that we were able to get that one on, and very appreciative of his insights on things Oregon-related, Oregon-Washington-related, and so on.
Yeah, and definitely going to have to start making a little more noise. Bring back defensive ends wearing 49. Just do
absolutely.
It.
Oh, absolutely. We need to see. I'm all, you know me, I'm all about creative numbers in general.
Always. Well, man, we got to finally get to it. I know we've dismissed them most of the episode, but we've got to talk about this matchup with the Washington Huskies. I'm, you know, everyone knows my opinion on the Washington football team up there. No, not the one in D.C., but even more disappointing dogs up in the Seattle Northwest where I'm from. And they've been pretty quiet this week. I think they've reasonably so. They haven't been to Autzen Stadium in a while. I know a lot of people that were talking about making the trip a couple weeks ago that have completely bailed on those plans that are dog fans. So I'm really excited for this game. If this team can continue to play the way that they've been playing this season – I expect us to go out and continue the streak of performances we're on. And I just can't see this team going into Autzen Stadium and being able to, out of nowhere, generate a win. Because as we've seen in the past few weeks, there's been a couple games that this team should not, or, you know, shouldn't have won is something I hate to say in the game of football, but a little too close. And going back to actually seeing Arizona and Washington in person, I honestly thought Arizona could probably beat them on a home game. And Arizona doesn't seem to be able to play very well on the road this season. But I really thought, dang, UW is really lucky that they are at home for this game. But the thing that can't be denied is Michael Penix Jr. has come in and absolutely turned around their passing game. A huge step up from Dylan Morris or Sam Heward. He's been able to spread the ball all around the field. The offense that Kalen DeBoer has brought in is certainly a threat to our defensive backfield, but I also don't think they've seen the defensive front like ours yet, and they have not been on a serious road test like ours. And when they have, I mean, going down to UCLA and the Rose Bowl is not anything like the atmosphere Autzen Stadium is going to be bringing.
Well, Coach DeBoer said it this week, and he seemed pretty comfortable in saying it. This is going to be the loudest environment Washington has partaken in. He said on the road, but let's be honest, in general, all season, this is going to be the most volatile, the most hostile, the most, well, F the Huskies, they'll have, period, all season. The students will be getting after them. The fans will be getting after them. The players are always going to be chatting. And, I mean, look, it really is going to be a complete dubs down energy for every single person who is going to be in that building wearing yellow that day.
Well, and the thing you have to think about from their end is they're probably highly motivated. You know they've got to be replaying what Mario Cristobal said in the leaked locker room audio of, you know, their claim to the Pac-12 North in 2020. And, you know, bring it. I want them to bring that kind of energy because, it makes for a better game. It makes this rivalry that much better. And, hey, man, they they still have yet to really come in ever since we've had the change at, you know, when Mario took over. They've really not had the ability to brag on us in a long time. And in the off season, it felt like they were thinking this could be the year. And as this season's gone along, I think they've realized how big the gap in recruiting has been over the past couple of years. And that's really made a big difference into where these teams were able to transition with new coaching staffs. Now, speaking of new staffs, we know why they needed a new staff. And that was Jimmy Lake at, you know, Autzen North last season, going and basically losing his mind on a walk-on linebacker on the sidelines. And with everything that came into that rivalry week and the talks of academic prowess, ended up losing his job over that. And honestly, I'm kind of happy for Washington, because I'm excited to see, you know, DeBoer come from Fresno State, where, you know, we saw Fresno State come in and put up a decent offensive performance against Mario Cristobal and the Ducks last year. But I really think this is a good trajectory. And to be honest, and I hate to say it, the Pac-12 and Oregon is a better brand when Washington is competitive. So, hey, man, bring it. I'm excited. I hope that this will have all the energy of previous games, but not as close a score, because this Ducks team, I'm expecting to come out, and if they do play to their potential and Oregon is truly their opponent outside of the noise that they know that the fan bases will be making, I just don't see this game being close unless we find some issues being able to, you know, keep the Bo Nix safe, number one, and two, shut down their passing game, which has been a little bit of a challenge for our defense this year.
Shutting down the passing game has absolutely had its moments of being difficult, and I think that against a guy like Penix Jr., that could really come back to haunt you potentially. On the season, 23 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, only been sacked 5 times. I know Bo Nix has only gone down once, but only being sacked 5 times through as many games they've played, it is impressive. That is an offensive line that has been playing some very quality football so far for them. Penix, he'll have his chance to sling it all over the place. He's almost thrown it 400 times so far this season. He's got 3,232 yards passing. He is a guy who, if given the opportunity, can beat you. The key for Oregon is to not give him that opportunity. That defensive line, it has to be as active as it's been all season long. Guys that we were talking about in that first segment, they really, really need to step up big time in this matchup. I think that hopefully, and I say hopefully, Oregon will be able to get some guys back, guys like DJ Johnson, who didn't make that trip up to Boulder. But even with him out, we saw Braden Swinson play a very good game up in Boulder. We saw Funa provide what was necessary when it was. Oregon's defensive front has to get pressure on Penix, has to force him into uncomfortable situations. If they can do that, I'm not very concerned about what this Oregon team will be able to do. Washington's defense has given points up this season. They have. You saw that Arizona game. I believe they gave up 39 or something like that to the Wildcats. Oregon's offense is one of the best in the nation. If their defense can serve and can hold up well, I'm confident in the Ducks. I'm confident that we'll see a whole lot of dubs down on the field and after the game.
Yeah, and well, you know, we got to talk about the origin of that dubs down last week with our guest Cyrus Abibi Likio. Go back and check it out if you haven't already. But one guy that, you know, I definitely have to mention, he's been here since that 2018 game, the debut of the dubs down from Dylan Mitchell. Well, his name's Peyton. Come on, Peyton. Peyton Henry, their kicker, has actually been perfect on the season. And, you know, with that extra COVID, you're still around in this rivalry and still hasn't seen a win yet. So would love to see him rattled in Autzen Stadium. Just bring back some fond memories for me.
Well, and Henry is perfect on the season. You mentioned he hasn't missed a kick yet. But he's going to be going up against a guy who also hasn't missed a kick yet in Camden Lewis. We were joking about it. What if this game just became a field goal off? Well, you know what? In 2019, I would not have been comfortable saying that at all. In 2018, I wouldn't have been comfortable saying that at all. In 2020, I might not have been comfortable saying that at all. But in 2022, I am comfortable. If Oregon needs a field goal, if Oregon needs a big kick, I'm comfortable they'll be able to get that from Camden Lewis. This has been a team that has evolved, especially in the special teams unit throughout this season. They have continued to look better and better. He has been phenomenal throughout. I think the kicking matchup will actually be a very interesting one and one to keep your eye on throughout this ballgame.
Yeah, well, the best way to not have to worry about a kicking matchup is to get it in the end zone. And if Bo Nix can get it in there for six, five times like he seems to regularly do against these teams, I just don't see UW being able to hold up. And, maybe it's, I don't know. You don't know what could happen on game day, but, man, there's just a part of me that just thinks what I've seen of this team, it's going to be some of the toughest receivers we've seen since Arizona. It's going to be a little awkward seeing a quarterback that will be rolling out to his left and preferring his left side being a left-hander. But something just tells me with the way they've played against teams that I don't think were even near the quality that they have, I don't see them going in Autzen Stadium and performing well. And when you have a passing game is, built on timing, built on getting it out and spreading the field, you have to be really, really accurate, because if you're not, you're not only giving the ball back to the other team, but you're not taking time off the clock. And this is a team that will not be a ball control offense unless they're completing downfield. So I'm excited for this matchup for the Ducks, but you never know what could happen.
Well, I think this is going to be a huge matchup for the Ducks because they are playing 4 p.m., 7 p.m. Eastern. That means the entire country is going to be up and watching it. Against a nationally ranked opponent coming down the stretch in November. This is a big game for the eyes around the country to be able to see Oregon. Going on in that same time slot, they're going to be competing with Georgia, who's going to probably beat the crap out of Mississippi State. You've got a Kansas State Baylor game, a North Carolina Wake Forest game, and the other big ball game at that time will be TCU in Texas. There's one other game going on, but there will be plenty of eyes on this Oregon-Washington matchup. A ton, I'm willing to bet, will be interested in seeing how this Oregon team looks and performs against a team currently ranked 24 in the nation. If Oregon comes out, dominates, looks like the Oregon team we've seen since the kickoff against Eastern Washington, spells good things for the Ducks moving forward. If they struggle, or worse, they lose, well then, again, on that national stage, not a great look, especially moving forward. This game also has huge Pac-12 implications, huge rivalry implications, huge Pac-12 North implications. Even though that doesn't really matter anymore, it still matters in terms of the bragging rights. This is the North. These are the Bay Area schools, the Oregon schools, and the Washington schools. You want to be the best out of that group. To be the best, Oregon has to win this weekend against Washington. It's going to be a big game. It's one that I'm excited for us to predict here in a few moments. I'm just curious from you, Nick. Do you remember, or can you at least relate back to the last time you felt an Oregon-Washington matchup was this big and this big for Oregon?
I mean, when you put it that way, no, it's been a while. You know, back in my day in particular, this game was, it really was a true faceless opponent mentality, and it wasn't an opportunity, or we weren't normally in a situation like it is where there's these narratives going around like Oregon has to perform, and you know their schedule isn't tough enough unless, you know, we can find a way to squeak in another top ranked beat down. But I don't know, man, I think the biggest thing is the 2018 game was probably that big in a different sense, in that, you know, we had to turn things around. If you lose three straight in this rivalry, it can go a lot more than three. And that's the interesting thing about this rivalry, is it's always been kind of one-sided throughout the years. And whether that's been on the Washington teams of the past or the present Oregon teams, there's just these long streaks that hold up in this rivalry. And that's why it makes it not one of the most, you know, it's not just one of the oldest rivalries, but it's one of the most unique in that sense, where it's not always that competitive. But we've seen the past couple seasons, it's been pretty close. The talent gap has been a lot closer. But This one, I think, is all about really just proving what the brand is. And if you are consistent with that, I think that message is going to mean a lot more going forward. And yes, I think a lot of the people that won't even end up watching this game will just look at the score and base a lot of it off that. But at the end of the day, whether they're ranked or not, everyone knows, at least, you know, most people know about this rivalry, and that with most rivalry games, it could go either way. But that's not usually the case in this one, but that's going to be the perception out there, even if it is a close game, I think. And I know at least the perception of the rivalry nationally is pretty good, but we're always interested in what you guys think. And that's why we always put out some great Twitter questions. Sam, you put one out there, which Dubs Down moment is your favorite? Now, we got to talk about the origin of Dubs Down, and Dylan Mitchell in 2018 being the debut was the first option, your second option being Penei Sewell, 2019. The Troy Dye post-game interview is another option. And then Johnny Johnson and company all doing it in 21 last year. And so far, we've got 417 votes. And pretty much, I'm confident enough to say the Troy Dye moment is going to win this poll significantly.
Well, and I don't think that surprised anybody. That was with Holly Rowe post-game, the interview that quickly spread around the college football world. Troy Dye, always great for a big moment, always great for a soundbite, even if the soundbite is just a hand gesture. Great for it. I think personally, though, hear me out on this. My favorite's going to, my vote's going to go toward Penei Sewell. Just because there's nothing, there's no performative aspect, if that makes sense. It almost, yeah, like Dylan Mitchell scored a touchdown, was celebrating. Troy Dye celebrating a big win with the cameras there on ESPN Live. Johnny Johnson and company reviving a great moment that had been lost in the 2020 season. I got to appreciate that. But Penei Sewell on the sideline, a video that was caught just by, I believe, a fan with their phone. The fact that he was so hyped up, so excited, so engaged with everybody, how hard he hits it down right there is just so exciting. It makes you ready to go run through a wall. Ah, watching Penei Sewell get that excited. And then seeing him come out of the tunnel for the Detroit Lions.
So I was going to say, you're robbing our Twitter fans here, Sam. So at Bob L. Middleton was actually one of the first to point out here, the actual real winner wasn't in the poll. It was Panay's Dubs Down coming out for the Lions on Sunday. Gotta love it. Setting up Husky Hate Week as well as you possibly can at the professional level. And he's, you know, he could float that as a Michigan thing or something, but we all know out here, Ducks country, exactly what it means.
Well, exactly, Nick. And it's the passion for the rivalry. That was one thing among so many that I will always appreciate about Penei, his engagement and excitement for the rivalries, how much in just 3 years he developed to care so thoroughly about that matchup. I love it. I got to give him my vote.
Well, and another rivalry that was brought up in a single picture from at DeEstrada94. I recommend you guys all check it out. That's Dominic Estrada. Had to bring up the hockey team, you know, which of course, he being a hockey barstool athlete, you know, had to represent. But having seen the I-5 Cup up here and in dominant performances, there's quite a gap in those programs. But man, the hate is still so strong up here from those fans. And when we were last year at the Kraken Ice Pledge, you know, little their practice facility where this game was played, man, it was crazy. They ran their mouths the entire game, regardless of how bad they were getting beat down, man. It was almost like more hostile than the football environment for the smaller amount of people. It was just insane. So no love lost there. And love seeing the hockey team throw their Dubs Down. So make sure you go check that out. Let's see. Quack Fiend at, oh, I'm not even going to try to say your Twitter handle, man. You need to go get that changed. Said Die because it was during an interview. Sewell second for the aggression. So yeah, that's a tough one for me because I lean towards the Die, but it's completely for selfish reasons. Because if you know, I'm seated right behind die right there. I'm just over his shoulder. If you go back earlier in the interview, you can catch a glimpse of me in my silly captain's outfit there and the Dick scarf right around me. I was having a pretty damn good time, and little did I know that I would be seeing that clip later and just always thinking about how, I mean, let's not, it wasn't the best weather, but we had a damn fun time in that stadium. Every Oregon fan there at Autzen North at the end of that game was right there on the railing celebrating with the team, and still just remember that energy just carrying on. And man, I don't know. There's just something like that every single year in this rivalry since that 2018 beatdown that we've had some moments to flex, and I'm excited to see which one might come this Saturday.
Well, I am as well. And I think Oregon-Washington rivalry, like, even though it has been lopsided, it really has been. In my football-watching lifetime, I remember two Washington wins. It's true. But there have always been big moments that come out of these games, big exciting moments, right? Even in a game like 2009, for example, not a game that's going to come to anybody's mind immediately when you think about the Oregon-Washington rivalry. But I will never not think about a Spencer Paysinger or blocked punt in that game. Just such an exciting moment to come out of a game that really seemed rather one-sided, and it was. The next season in 2010, the same thing. Very lopsided. But what I'll always remember is Kenyon Barner getting back into the end zone after having been on the disabled list for several weeks following a concussion up at Wazoo. Each one of these games, they'll always have little moments in them that speak so loud, whether it's Vernon Adams returning from injury in 2015, whether it's a game like 2014 that's remembered for the uniform more than it is the actual ball game. I bet that nobody could tell me how many yards passing Mariota had that day off the top of their head, but they absolutely could say that was the pick throwback game. It absolutely was. This is a rivalry I love. Three of my favorite football games I've ever attended: 2018 versus Washington, 2019 versus Washington, 2021 versus Washington. All so much fun. It's always fun seeing Oregon beat the Huskies. And I'm willing to say I think we both have that in the cards for this weekend.
Hey, man, you know I couldn't pick the Dogs. Yeah, it's just one of the things as a Washington guy myself and having to deal with some of their fans up here. Yeah, couldn't see myself doing it. And, you know, it's the extra layer to it is them missing out on that 2020 opportunity that just adds that extra little bit. Like, anything you've been holding back from saying to the Huskies fans in Autzen Stadium, you've had to wait just that extra set of year, like 2 years, you know, that gap there. You haven't had something like that since, you know, the Pac-10 just decided not to schedule them the 2001 season, like, which honestly worked out pretty damn good for the Huskies, I think. Oh man, I still look back at, like, when you're going through the schedules and trying to compare wins recently, you look at that and you go, what the hell happened? Who thought it would be a good idea in the Pac-12 not to schedule, or Pac-10 at the time, to not schedule that game? But hey, you know, one Stanford game away from that working out pretty well for the Ducks. And man, maybe could have swapped Stanford in that schedule for the Huskies that season. That might have worked out. But this season, I'm just excited to see the performance we're going to come out with, and especially, as always, offensive line. When you get in a big rivalry game and things get chippy, those are the guys that need to be the most honed in, the guys that are enforcers out there, the guys that need to be speaking the most with their physical presence. And that shuts up a lot of the chit-chat right there up front on the football field, and I expect our guys to do it. They've been doing it all season, and we've got a number of guys, not just on that front line, but, you know, the guys in the backups. And I'm excited to see what new offensive wrinkles we have in plan for our rivals up north.
Well, and I think the offensive line is a great group to mention because it's such a veteran group. A lot of those guys were in Autzen the last time these teams played. Alex Forsyth, now as a senior, he was absolutely there. Bass and Walk, they were both well aware of this rivalry. They're both very comfortable in understanding exactly what was going on. I believe if Steven Jones plays in this ball game, he is also one of those guys who's redshirting that year. But if you look at the tape from the locker room after that game. He was very, very excited over an Oregon victory that week. I think that the newer guys in this roster, they've done a very good job of being made aware of the rivalry. I don't think anybody doesn't take it as seriously as it should be taken. That being said, the faceless opponent thing does come into play a little bit. You are playing your rival. You want to win this game. But also, be sure you're playing against Oregon. Be sure you're taking care of the things you can take care of. If the Ducks do that, I really do think it all falls into place. It's probably time for predictions by now, Nick. I never want to do it either. I'll let you kick it off. But Oregon, lightning yellow head to toe this weekend in Eugene. What's going to happen?
Man, I'm telling you, I want blood. I want us to have a 50 burger on the Huskies. You know, I really would like, you know, a 70-20 something victory, but that's something that people tend to hang their hat on for years and years at a time. So I want to be, you know, a little more modest. Let's just go 52-31 and give them a couple sad points at the end to make it seem more competitive, like they had a good offense. But I don't see it being a game that will be close after the third quarter. So I'll put it that way. And I think the score at the end might not be indicative of quite the gap in performance, but I'm going to go with that.
I've got this one around a similar score, especially on the Washington end. 31 for them felt right coming into this one all week. It's a team that's been averaging about 38 points per game this season. I think Oregon's defense is good enough to take at least one of those touchdowns off the board for them. In terms of Oregon's offense, they've been scoring in the 40s all season. They've been reliably scoring in the 40s. I think that happens again. My final score is going to be Oregon 42, Washington 31. I don't think it's going to feel like that close of a game. Probably a lot like UCLA. Oregon will hold a lead throughout the majority of the ball game. Maybe a late touchdown puts it a bit closer, but the Ducks get the victory.
Well, I'm excited for it. We'll both be there. You know, make sure you not only give us a like, follow, and subscribe, but if you see us, give us a shout out. Come take a pic with us. We love it. And it always helps to get feedback from you guys in person. Nothing better than that. And make sure you guys let us know what you thought of this interview and who you want to see us interview next. Be sure, if you aren't following on Twitter, while that's still a thing, hasn't been burned to the ground yet, and our Instagram, where Sam does an awesome job putting up all our clips from the most, you know, highlights of these podcasts. But you got to make sure you check out the full episode, all of that available for you on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. And just thank you guys. Hope to see you out there. Be loud, be proud, wear your yellow, and once a Duck, always a Duck.